Good evening. The 18th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks draws controversy. I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, September 11th, 2019.
Colleen Ann DeLowry.
Joseph DeLuca.
Manuel Del Valle Jr.
Francis Albert.
Today is the 18th anniversary of the coordinated attacks that killed nearly 3,000 people on September 11th, 2001. People who were too young on 9/11 to even remember their lost loved ones, and others for whom the grief is still raw, paid tribute with wreath layings and the solemn roll call of the dead Wednesday as America marked the worst terror attack on U.S. soil.
Jean C. DePalma.
Jose Nicholas DePena.
Robert John Durrani.
Michael DiRienzo.
David Paul DeRubio.
Jamal Legas DeSantis.
And my husband, Bernard Petronico. We've learned how to live without you, but we will never forget you, and we miss you, always.
And my brother, Khalid Muhammad Shahid. Your beautiful spirit and contagious smile lives on through your four nieces and one nephew who bears your name. Not a day goes by that you aren't in our thoughts and memories. Keep shining down on us, big bro. We love you, miss you, and we'll never forget. God bless you, and God bless us all.
The attacks included two passenger jets that crashed into the north and south towers of the World Trade Center, another passenger plane that slammed into the Pentagon outside of Washington, D.C., and a fourth plane that crashed near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, apparently after a struggle between the hijackers and passengers on the plane. The aircraft was reportedly heading for its target, the Capitol building in Washington. 2,996 people died in the attacks, including 19 hijackers. On that day, WBAI was broadcasting from its then studios at 120 Wall Street, about six blocks from the unfolding disaster. On the air in the station were Sunrise host Marjorie Moore, engineer and programmer Max Schmid, morning show guest Dana Beal, among others.
We have breaking news. It looks like a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center. There is a huge explosion and fire at the top of the World Trade Center. This is a live broadcast at 8:52 in the morning. We have no story right now as to the cause, if it's an accident or was intentional, but it looks like the top half of both towers are absolutely in flames. This is a huge disaster. Be careful. Stay out of the lower Manhattan area. We're going to get headlines on this story and be back as soon as we can with updates. Again, live at this moment, an aircraft or something has exploded into the top floors of the World Trade Center, causing a massive disaster situation.
A lot
of smoke coming out of the tops
Between
of the building.
Towers.
This is live. Mm-hmm. We will come back to you in a moment.
There
is a huge gaping hole in the top,
an airplane-shaped hole.
Gigantic hole in the side of one of the Twin Tower buildings. It is burning. There's smoke coming out of it. It looks like a major disaster has occurred in downtown Manhattan.
Apparently, there's paper flying all around outside of our windows right here at 120 Wall Street. Max Schmid just came in to say.
Right.
Yeah.
So we can see it from
plenty
here.
Plenty of smoke, both towers.
It's a major disaster, and you have to understand the World Trade Center just 7 years ago was the target of a terrorist bombing attack that injured and killed six people and injured 1,000. And we don't know what is the nature of this, if it was just an accident or intentional, but it looks like a disaster has occurred in lower Manhattan. This will be dominating our news throughout the whole world in the United States, I'm sure, today. And stay tuned for Democracy Now. And I'm sorry, sad to report the disaster in lower Manhattan, and I'm sure
there's
nobody
was hurt.
It's a major, major disaster right now.
At least the people, who were in
that
plane.
Be careful. Avoid Lower Manhattan.
Not with us anymore.
Stay out of Lower Manhattan.
As the day unfolded, news director Jose Santiago and reporter Eric Williams and a cast of listener contributors joined the broadcast that linked Pacifica stations in Washington, D.C., Houston, Texas, and Los Angeles, California in a full day of live coverage. WBAI was able to continue broadcasting in part because electricity was not turned off in Lower Manhattan until about 5 p.m. after the collapse of Building 7, a 47-story tower 350 feet from the Twin Towers that caught fire, although it was not hit directly by any of the planes. Now, a report released by University of Alaska researchers say they've been studying the collapse of Building 7 for 4 years and claim the fires did not cause the structure's collapse. Using computer models, Dr. Leroy Hulsey, Dr. Zili Kwan, and Professor Feng Zhao say the principal conclusion of our study is that fire did not caused the collapse of World Trade Center 7 on 9/11, contrary to the conclusions of NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and private engineering firms that studied the collapse. A group that's been advocating a theory that the collapse was not the result of a terrorist attack but a conspiracy is Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Roland Angle is a civil engineer and member of the group's board of directors.
Building 7 was a 47-story tall steel frame building called the Solomon Brothers Building, which was located about 300 yards north of the North Tower. And it came down September 11th, 2001, at about 5:20 in the afternoon, which was about 7 hours after the last tower had, after Building 1 had collapsed. It wasn't hit by a plane. It suffered some damage when Tower 1 collapsed. It suffered some fires, which were caused apparently by the debris from the first tower. And then it collapsed straight down into its own footprint at about 5:20 in the afternoon in about 7 seconds. For that reason, it is of great interest to the engineering community as to why that building failed. No other high-rise steel frame building had ever collapsed due to fires before.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't struck by a plane.
No, was not hit by a plane. There was some damage to the southwest corner of the building, lower down. It's never been exactly determined how serious that damage was, but the NIST report said that it wasn't a factor in the building collapse. So,
what is this report? Who did this report?
The report that was just released was done under the direction of Professor Leroy Hulsey, who's a professor of civil engineering up at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And he and a couple of his graduate students worked on this report for the past 4 years and examined it in great detail and determined that the building could not possibly have collapsed due to fires, as the NIST report has claimed.
What is the NIST report?
The National Institute of Standards and Technology is a branch of the Commerce Department, and they produced a report in 2005 on the Twin Towers and why they collapsed, and then it produced a second report on Building 7 alone in 2008, which purported to explain why that building had collapsed.
What's the official explanation?
The official explanation, as reported by NIST, was that due to thermal expansion, some of the structural members caused by the fires in the building, that a series of collapses or failures at connections to the floor members, to the vertical columns, caused a internal collapse of the floors, which led to instability of the columns, and the columns buckled, and that's what brought the building down.
Is there any speculation in this new report that you're referring to as to how it came down?
After they determined that fire possibly have done it, they subjected the building structure. First of all, they reconstructed the building in a computer model. Then they subjected it to the same kind of fires that NIST claimed had existed in the building and determined that they couldn't get the building to fail under those conditions. So then they said, well, how could we get the building to come down as it is shown in the videos? And they finally determined that the only way to make that happen was to take out 8 floors of columns, all the columns in the building. There are 82 columns in the building. Take them all out, take the core columns out, and then take the perimeter columns out a second and a half later, and then you could get what looked like the collapse that you see in the video. So their presentation says you have to take out 8 floors below the 16th floor in order to get that event to occur.
The story's been that there were fuel tanks that were used by the Secret Service automobiles, the fuel tanks that were used by different agencies of the government stored there for some reason, generator fuel tanks, things like that. It was, for some reason, had been chosen by the mayor at the time, Giuliani, as the headquarters of their emergency response units.
There was diesel fuel in the building, but most of it was recovered in a tank that was underground. So there was very little diesel fuel in the building itself. There were no reports by any credible sources or any sources that there was diesel fuel burning in the building, neither by the firefighters nor anyone else that was close to the scene. So NIST ruled out diesel fires and said that it was just office fires, furnishings that supplied the fuel for the fires that were burning. That early speculation was later proven to be not true. As far as Giuliani putting his emergency office of emergency response there on the 23rd floor, there was no fuel associated with that structure that would have led to the fires. And besides that, the fires were all lower down in the building. So that didn't have any effect on the fires either.
Do you have any speculation or your group as to what might have caused the building to collapse?
There was a study that showed that there was residue of explosives in the dust that was generated that day. That was a scientific study that was performed by Niels Harrit and Professor Jones, Stephen Jones, and a whole cadre of other scientists from Europe. They took 4 different samples of the dust that was found in the area that day, and they found the residue of nanothermite in the dust. And nanothermite is a highly explosive-designed explosive that can be used to explode and cut through steel members. So our speculation is that since you have evidence that there were explosives in the dust, there must have been explosives in the buildings. However, NIST did not perform any studies on the dust. Actually, that's a violation of the fire code, because given the way the buildings came down, they were mandated by the fire code to perform tests to determine if any explosives were in the residue, and they did not do that. So that's a serious problem with the NIST reports, and subsequent to that, we found out that there was, in fact, residue in the dust. So, yeah, that's our speculation, that somehow explosives were put in the building prior to the event, and they were detonated that day.
Roland Angle is a civil engineer and a member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And you're listening to the news on WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Every year on September 11th, powerful searchlights are used to illuminate the former site of the World Trade Center, Twin Towers, destroyed in the 9/11 attacks. But the tribute to light reportedly endangers an estimated 160,000 migrating birds a year. Flocks of birds circle these lights, seemingly unable to veer away, and are pulled off course, putting them at risk of deadly exhaustion or injury. The 7-day illumination display coincides with a much older yearly ritual, the migration of birds across New York City. On Tuesday, the New York City Council held a committee meeting on a bill requiring new or renovated buildings to use more bird-friendly glass. Meanwhile, at the Pentagon, where 189 people were killed, including 5 hijackers, 29 passengers, and 59 passengers and 125 employees in the building, President Donald Trump took time to address his pullout from peace talks with the Taliban in Afghanistan. The talks were abruptly ended by Trump after a bombing attack in Kabul that killed a dozen people, including a U.S. soldier from Puerto Rico.
We had peace talks scheduled a few days ago. I called them off when I learned that they had killed a great American soldier from Puerto Rico and 11 other innocent people. They thought they would use this attack to show strength, but actually what they showed is unrelenting weakness. The last 4 days, we have hit our enemy harder than they have ever been hit before, and that will continue.
Tomorrow on the WBAI Evening News, we'll be addressing the current situation in Afghanistan with former State Department official Matthew Ho, who resigned over disagreements with U.S. policy in Afghanistan. Trump wasn't the only person to politicize the 9/11 memorials. Nick Haros took on the opportunity to slam Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, who had referred to the 9/11 hijackers as some people.
Some people did something, said a freshman congresswoman from Minnesota, to support and justify the creation of CARE. Today I am here to respond to you exactly who did what to whom. Madam, objectively speaking, we know who and what was done. There is no uncertainty about that. Why your confusion? On that day, 19 Islamic terrorists, members of Al-Qaeda, killed over 3,000 people and caused billions of dollars of economic damage. Is that clear? But as to whom? I was attacked. Your relatives and friends were attacked. Our constitutional freedoms were attacked. And our nation's founding on Judeo-Christian principles were attacked. That's what some people did. Got that now? We are here today, Congresswoman, to tell you and the squad just who did what to whom. Show respect in honoring them, please. American patriotism and your position demand it. For God and country, amen.
Omar responded within minutes with a tweet reading, "September 11th was an attack on all of us. We will never forget the thousands of Americans who lost their lives in the largest terror attacks on U.S. soil. I will continue to fight to make sure we care for the first responders and families who lost loved ones," and the hashtag never forget. Finger-pointing over who was responsible for the 9/11 disaster hasn't usually marred the solemn ceremony in the past, although numerous theories as to the hidden motives and agendas have been put forward. Former New Jersey Governor Thomas Keene headed up the 9/11 Commission, which presented its final report of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks upon the United States. The report stated that the attacks were part of an insurgency and that the U.S. response should be a combination of diplomacy and military power. From the beginning, the report was criticized from various positions as a whitewash. An investigative reporter, Peter Lance, has written three books critical of the Justice Department's handling of national security in the years before the 9/11 attacks. He says there were many clues that should have alerted the FBI to the threatened attacks, but he agrees with the 9/11 Commission that the 9/11 attacks were launched by Al-Qaeda, the Islamist radical group headed by Osama bin Laden.
The 9/11 attacks were the result of Islamic jihadism perpetrated by Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, despite all the conspiracy theories that say no. But there's a larger story, which I've documented in three books for HarperCollins, starting in the year 2003. My first book was called A Thousand Years for Revenge, International Terrorism and the FBI. And basically what I have proven over almost 10 years of research and reporting, as documented in these books, Paul, is that the Justice Department and the New York office, specifically the FBI, which was the bin Laden office of origin, dropped the ball dozens and dozens of times between the first World Trade Center bombing and 9/11. For many years, in fact, it was the narrative of the Justice Department and the FBI that there was no connection between the 1993 bombing by Ramzi Youssef and his cell and 9/11. And yet Youssef's uncle is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I mean, it doesn't take a security clearance to kind of figure out the connection there. And I proved in my first book, A Thousand Years for Revenge, that bin Laden had funded the original bombing cell, and that after the bombing, Youssef fled to the Philippines, where he connected with KSM and a lifelong friend, basically Abdul Hakim Murad, who'd been a pilot trained in four U.S. flight schools, and they hatched what became the 9/11 plot, the planes into buildings plot, in the Philippines in the fall of 1994. And the Philippines National Police exposed the plot after they had a fire in their bomb factory. Youssef and KSM fled to Islamabad, but Murad was captured, and after over 67 days, not of being tortured, but just being interrogated by Colonel Rodolfo Mendoza, he gave up the whole plot. And Colonel Mendoza, I documented, had sent all this material through the FBI legast in Manila to the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District. And the Southern District of New York, this lauded office that gets all this praise currently for, you know, being this, such a august independent office, basically knew about the plot in 1995. But for various reasons that are too complicated to get into right now, they basically obfuscated. And so then negligence became obstruction of justice. They were basically embarrassed that they had failed over the years. First, they failed to stop the original bombing, and they didn't want to draw a line between the 1993 Rumsey Yousef bombing of the Trade Center and 9/11. So they had a narrative which was propagated throughout the 9/11 Commission. Patrick Fitzgerald, who had been the head of terrorism and organized crime in the Southern District, who went on to become the special counsel in the Valerie Plame CIA leak case. He became U.S. attorney in Chicago. Patrick Fitzgerald testified that he wasn't really sure if there was a connection between the 93 bombing and 9/11, which is absolutely absurd. And ultimately, I was vindicated in my investigation, and when in 2010, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District modified the superseding indictment on Rumsey Yousef, who was ultimately caught and rendered back to the U.S. and tried both for what they call the Manila air bomb trial in 96, and then he was again convicted in 97 for the original World Trade Center bombing. They modified the superseding indictment on Yousef to include KSM and all the 9/11 murders. So I was vindicated, but how many years did it take, and how many dots were unconnected during that period of time? So now when people talk about, in the age of Trump, when people talk about the Justice Department and the integrity of it and how it's not politicized and how all the people that work there are just these, you know, wonderful, dedicated, loyal, non-political, investigators and public servants, there's always been a huge amount of politicization within the DOJ, and as we see now with William Barr, of course, and even particularly in the New York office of the FBI.
Lance also has his own theory that a firefighter with intelligence connections was ignored when he warned authorities of a person he believed was a foreign agent planted in the New York Fire Department.
I think the sad lesson of 9/11 is that the real heroes, and one of them is a guy named Ronnie Bucca. If you go to peterlance.com, my website, I always put a tribute up on every anniversary of 9/11 to Ronnie. He was the Paul Revere of the War on Terror. He was an ex-Green Beret. He was a working fire marshal in New York. And because he had a top-secret clearance in military intelligence, he used to go down. His billet, his duty post was DIAC, the Defense Intelligence Analysis Center at Bowling Air Force Base in Washington. And he had a top-secret clearance, and he'd go down after the bombing in 93, and he saw this incredible intelligence. He even found evidence of a Al-Qaeda-related spy working in the fire department. He brought it to the FBI, and they basically laughed at him, okay? And Ronnie Bucca kept warning people, they're going to come back, they're going to hit the towers. He thought they were going to go below, as they did originally with the truck bomb. He didn't anticipate the planes. But on the day of 9/11, even though he was not in a fire suppression unit, he was working at the Lafayette Station, Manhattan base of the fire marshals, and with his boss, Jimmy Devery, as soon as the first plane hit the North Tower, they got in a car, lights and sirens went down to Liberty Street. Ronnie went up to the 78th floor, the fire floor, higher than anybody else except one other, Oreo Palmer, a battalion chief, met him there. And they died with their boots on, you know? And Ronnie Bucca is one of the true heroes. And, you know, if the FBI and their arrogance had listened to dedicated first responders like him, the towers might still be standing.
Investigative reporter Peter Lance can be contacted through his webpage, peterlance.com. He's the author of 1,000 Years for Revenge, the inside story of the terrorists who designed the 9/11 plot and the two heroes who tried to stop him and cover up, and the third book, Triple Cross. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, September 11th, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry and Oliver Sampson. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.
real sense of unity here right now. I hope it spreads.
And if the darkness is to keep us apart.